And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Welcome to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. I am from the B-E-A-U-T-F-L studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Okay, Scott Heller. Get right. I'm sorry, Scott Horton. We had Charles Heller on. He wanted to make sure that you guys got his email, Charles Heller, H-E-L-L-E-R, Charles Heller at azcdl.org. That's Arizona Citizens Defense League.org. AZCDL.org. Charles Heller. Okay. Yeah, he's, he'll shoot it straight with me, but he's definitely, doing the party Republican conservative second legislative lobbying thing. And I'm just, I'm friends with these guys. I know I'd just try and make them look moderate. It's all good. The, Scott Horton, ScottHorton.org, Scott two T's, Horton, H-O-R-T-O-N.org, trying to get him to come on a regular basis so, we get some, archive footage in as to build up the freaking World War III. I mean, damn. So I'm going, Scott, I got you there. Scott, oh, he's trying to call back in. Let me see if we can do like that. Scott, I got you. Okay, what am I missing here? Next to my heart. Your microphone may be muted. I'm not hearing you. Scott? Go ahead and call him if we have to. Just get him on the phone. As I'm looking at... What? I'll change the video. Everybody's seeing you behind me saying hello. Scott, we got you. Scott. Call him on the phone. So what we're going to do, one thing, with Scott Horton is that I'm able to get, talk to someone that speaks the same language and the same philosophical vibe we understand. Because a lot of times, I talk to these other, but don't you think we need a more perfect union? And I'm going, God, what makes you think I want a union? Where'd that come from? Just because they wrote it on some piece of parchment of, these guys in wigs wrote down perfect. Yeah, in order to form a more perfect union. Who the hell said I wanted a more perfect union? Who the hell said I wanted a union? So, it's just, then they're like, damn it, man. We didn't even get past the first thing. All right. So I'm going, and what do I think of my Skype? It was very bad. We'll just do it by phone. We got you there, Scott.
Hey, can you hear me now?
There we go.
So I could hear everything. AC/DC was jamming and everything. And then all of a sudden, dead silence.
Really?
I could hear everything. I could hear everything up until then.
You know what? It's probably one of these 3,000 buttons somewhere.
One of them buttons got pushed.
One of those buttons. Okay, well, we'll go ahead and do it this way. This is one thing that I wanted to go ahead and make sure that we got on, is this Turkey blocking. There is a opening into the Mediterranean from the Black Sea into the Mediterranean that goes right by Istanbul. So I'm going, okay, that little strait, I look, how's that? What if they just close that off? What if they closed off the Panama Canal? What if they closed off the Suez? So who controls the Suez? I think the United Kingdom, ultimately. You have the U.S. got base around Panama. You got a NATO ally, Turkey's got that little strait there, and Russia's fleet's in there, and they have a warm water port in Syria that they can get access to. And they said, you know what? You can't go through here anymore. I summed it up pretty good.
Well, I'm not sure about that, honestly, Ernie. I saw a headline along those lines that the Turks were giving the Russians a hard time there at the Bosporus Straits, but I'm afraid I'm not read up on it. I mean, common sense tells me that they're going to back down from that because...
It's an act of war.
Seriously, you're going to tell the Russians they're not allowed to float their boats this place or that place, this direction or that? They'll shoot you.
Yeah, that's an act of war, man. I'm like, wow, they want to play that game? There's some weird, weird, weird stuff going on. You know, the one thing that Russia is starting, okay, you guys want to play this game, shooting down our stuff and not claiming lying, and your guys are making money buying oil from, selling it to Israel out of ISIS of Syria, whatever the heck. You know, guess what? You know, we'll stop doing deals with you and your economic ties with, and we're kind of, oh, yeah, well, we'll block your navy. Oh, yeah, well, here's a mushroom cloud. I mean, this is how this stuff happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, the other thing is it just goes to show, just like with all of this stuff, this could all be negotiated away, right? There's no real reason why the Turks and the Russians should have to go to war with each other at all. I mean, every bit of this can all be... dealt with by diplomats if that was our government's policy. That was what they wanted to do.
Yeah, their goal.
Sit down and hash out all of this stuff. But they'd rather, you know, pretend to be tough. And, you know, I hate to do this because it sounds kind of childish, but then again, we're talking about government. I think almost all of this stuff, certainly when you're talking about the nation states, you can make the perfect analogy to just kids in the neighborhood, boys in the neighborhood, and how they get along with each other and the kinds of things they say and just how... much they really mean to back it up and that kind of thing, you know? So, you know, could we talk about this? Yeah, sure. Do, you know, Jimmy and Bobby prefer fighting today? Yeah, they want to go ahead and have a fist fight, so nobody wants to talk about it, you know?
Yeah, no, they want everybody to get around the circle and watch this and entertainment and ratings. I mean, you know, it's really, really, you want to see how we get into these freaking multi-nation state war of worldwide, whatever the hell. We're sitting here watching it in slow-mo train wreck, you know? So I'm wondering, what's going on with the oil thing? You got news on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've been covering this on my show for, I guess, years now, that, well, more than a year and a half, the Islamic State, where are they getting their revenue, right? They declared the caliphate in June of 2014, and you just look at a map, and they're completely landlocked, and they're completely surrounded by at least supposedly, or at least supposed enemies, right? So,
yeah, but don't they make
them robbing local banks and robbing local pension funds? But where are they getting their finances from? And it's selling oil to Turkey, black market oil to Turkey. I was saying this on your show a couple of weeks ago.
What, they don't have a cell phone factory or something? They don't make money, you know, like you know, mining something or something. They just get it as donors from the CIA or selling. You see, my point is, I'm like, so how the hell else do they make the money? And then it was, you know, they get them started with, you know, we just give them money, you know, to those five moderate, you know, Syrians or whatever. So, you know, and then they actually got some goodies and they go out and get access to the money line, which is the oil. But somebody has to buy it. Somebody has to give them money for that oil. How's that going on?
Yeah, it's the Turks. And what we found out, you know, very recently is, and I should say, there are accusations that they're selling oil to their enemy, Assad, which is possible, but I think that's mostly deflection, but worth mentioning anyway, I guess. But it seems like mostly they're selling their oil to Turkey, and perhaps even Erdogan's son is involved in it. I don't know how true those accusations are, but there seemed to be something to it. And then, you know, although, you know, there's a lesson in here, too, that I think puts the whole problem in perspective as well, Ernie, which is, according to this RAND Corporation study, and I've heard other reports along these very same lines since then, too, but there was a RAND Corporation study about a year ago, I guess, that said, oh, my God, everybody, you know, it looks like the Islamic State's revenue could be as much as $2 billion a year.
Damn.
A year. And I'm going, we spend $2 billion. Our army spends $2 billion just putting their socks on. You know, $2 billion a year, that's a lot for a terrorist group. That's a very small budget for a nation state.
Yeah, no, if we could, you know, heck, it's a lot cheaper for us to give some thug $2 billion than us, you know, hell, it costs that much just to send our guys over there. Oh, hell, a lot more than that. So that's a couple days operation of the fleet. I mean, you know, so I'm going, all right. We're going to talk more about the oil thing.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Okay, when we come back, the oil thing, let's go ahead and talk about the geography of what ISIS has taken over, how they were able to get it, and what resources are there. And sure. Then, you know, it going. I got the map up here that shows really good where all our bases, you know, Aramis hate us. They put their country right next to all our bases kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then and the role Turkey plays in opposition to Russia. Now, there is a waterway. Let's see. We got the Black Sea. That doesn't show on here. Let me get another map. Because I want to make that point. Let's see. Black Sea. And I'm wondering where the military base is. Okay, so we got the Black Sea, and Russia is on the coast of the Black Sea. You know, and we have Sochi, Sochi Olympics. You know, we got Georgia right next there. We got Ukraine, Russia.
Well, and they just announced some more NATO expansion. They want to invite in Moldova now.
And where's Moldova?
Right there in the Balkans. I got that wrong, too. It's not Moldova. It's Montenegro. Let me see here.
God, this is...
Montenegro. It's basically right there just west of Kosovo. On the Adriatic coast.
Okay, here's a good map. This. Copy. Put it to Scotsgiddy. Donna, how do I do this? I want to paste in this. I go like... Do it. Good. I don't know how. Okay. So we got that. 15 seconds. I can do it, man. There it is. Okay, I'm showing the Black Sea going to the Aegean Sea, and it goes through the Straits there. Now, see, Bulgaria, Moldova. So Moldova, does it have like a sliver that goes into... we're back.
2-800-602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
And we're back with Scott Horton. I'm sitting here playing. Buttons, man. All right, this is the Black Sea. You see a graphic on the video, and it shows the Black Sea, and it's up. It's like northeast corner of the Mediterranean Sea. Turkey's on the Mediterranean, and then you get below Turkey, you're going Syria, Lebanon, Israel, there, and you got Cyprus out in the ocean, that kind of stuff. So you go, all right, above that, you got the Aegean Sea that goes Greece and Athens there. You go north into this little Aegean Sea, then you get the Sea of Marmora. It's just a sliver of water that goes right past Istanbul. Which
this
was
is how
Constantinople.
Americans learn geography. We
I know.
Figure out who our government is killing, and then we try to figure out where on the map that is.
I know. It's like, well, we know. Okay, we can kill them now. We know where it is. All right, so we go to Istanbul, into the Black Sea. Now, was that a natural opening, or was that man-made?
No. It's been like that.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, so we got, you know, the luck of you have this opening into the Black Sea. Now, what borders on there? You have Turkey on the south side of the Black Sea, which is about the size of, I don't know, Spain or something. That's a pretty good size. So then you have Turkey. Then you have Georgia. It goes around on the right side. Then Russia. Then Ukraine, Moldova, Romania, Bulgaria, and Greece kind of almost borders it, and around to Turkey again. So think of this. Where do we have all this stuff going on in Georgia? And all we got is Russia. And then we're fighting Ukraine. And then you have, you know, Yalta and everything in the island out there. What are they? Crimea, right? Crimea? Is that what they call it? So Crimea out there, it's like almost an island. And then you got, it goes, so this is a, I mean, if you're going to have, you want to start a ruckus, this is where you do it. And where do you have to choke off Russia to where they can't get their Navy out and go to their other bases that they have in the Mediterranean, right through NATO ally Turkey, Istanbul, your ship shall not pass here. We're in a war. Oh, we are. Thanks for explaining that. So this is all about, I'm like, what the heck is going on? Because Russia is making a big deal. Yeah, you want to distract from what's going on? Turkey, you're buying with the family of the royal president, family of somebody knows somebody. You're funding ISIS by buying their oil that they're getting from lands that they've conquered. So this is the kind of the backdrop for this of stuff going on. How far off am I, Scott?
Yeah, well, they're certainly playing with fire, man. Now, you know, I haven't seen, you know, actual closing of the Bosporus Straits. I've seen a couple of headlines saying that they were doing that, but, I mean, this one is just from Sputnik News and Global Research. I mean, this doesn't seem like very credible information coming in, just rumors that they would try this. And I'm afraid I don't know the legalities, but I assume that that is international waters, that all governments and private companies have a right to float their boats through there. You know, other than in special circumstances that I'm unaware of, but I'm just guessing at that. But I'm pretty sure it's going to be the rule.
I'll tell you what, you know, the rule is whatever freaking you're not allowed, and I got a battleship and an aircraft carrier and mines because
well,
I said.
So here's the thing. I mean, look, the Turks shot down that Russian plane, and it, you know, it was a very risky thing for them to do, but, you know, really it made sense. You could see the strategy there is punishing the Russians for attacking the more Turkish-aligned jihadists and helping to drive a wedge between NATO and Russia, who at least half the time are attacking the same targets in the Islamic State. And so, you know, he's trying to screw that up. Now, does it make good sense politically for Erdogan to actually get into a real war with Russia? No. No, of course not. So, I mean, that doesn't mean that it's impossible. I like the way you always bring up World War One. World War One was supposed to not happen. And the reason all the alliances were the way they were is because they were supposed to be the ultimate deterrent. They wouldn't dare attack us. We're allied with the Germans. They wouldn't dare attack us. We're allied with the Russians. And so, but then once they dared to attack each other, tens of millions of people were killed. And there was no way to stop it. And then it just set up the whole planet for World War II and the rest of that. So I don't mean to say that this is riskless or anything like that, but I don't think that the government of Turkey is trying to get into a war with the Russians right now. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to overthrow Assad. You know, they're still, and Erdogan is still stuck on this idea that Assad has to go. The fact that the Russians have already called our bluff hasn't seemed to have really taken
root.
But
why do they,
you know,
care so much? Is it they're just part of, is it the oil thing? Is it access to European markets to punish, to stop the flow from Russia so that they can, they own more of the, see, it seems like Erdogan game, whatever their name is,
Erdogan,
his family, they're kind of tied in with the, they're getting a little bit of the pipeline of, we're making some cut on the transfer of wealth of black gold.
You know what I think, too, man, and I'm kind of just making this up, but it sort of seems to me like, you know, if you were the Ottomans running the thing, which, you know, he's kind of a half a throwback, at least, to the Ottomans, rather than being,
okay, you gotta explain,
you know,
that
a son of the secular Turk. And it seems like if you were the leader of Turkey and you wanted to recreate the caliphate, hey, why not let all the Arabs do all the dying to create the thing? and then just swoop in and take it over.
Yeah.
Back to history where Turkey
Game of Thrones,
runs Arabia.
Game of Thrones. Well, this is, if we're looking at, for those on the video and the map now, you'll see a continuous land bridge. It goes from Turkey down through Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Oman, Yemen. It's, because you know, the Arabian Peninsula, all Saudi Arabia, out when there was just a bunch of Bedouins and their camels, you know, nomadic desert thing, you know, that was all the Ottoman Empire, which was Turkey. The Ottoman Empire was in the peninsula there, and that's where Lawrence of Arabia and the First World War came in, that the British came in and funded the Arabs to push the Ottoman Empire out and said, look, we just made you boss of the, we just made this country here, and you can be the head of it because you got nice robes. And then that's the people they made the deals with for the oil. And then and now we need to keep our guy in charge. Well, here comes ISIS, Islamic. You create this whole ideology around we don't want to be ruled by you anymore. We'll rule. And then you start negotiating when you fund them and they take on the secular states that you don't like. We get, you know, into the Iraq war. We got the Afghanistan thing going on. We got to get Syria. There's going to be, you know, Lebanon. I don't know what's going to happen with Jordan, but, you know, Northern Africa, Libya, all that's going on. But Afghanistan, Pakistan, it was one of the first ones that we kind of, you know, were buddies with. But Iran has always been a pain in the ass. They don't speak Arabic. They speak Farsi. They're Persian. They're a different race. They're a different culture. They're different. And somehow, by going into Syria, that is also a backdoor Iran thing. Explain to me the role. We're focused on Syria, Turkey, and Russia. Iran's still there. What's going on?
Well, you know, Iran has not always been a pain in the ass. Iran was owned by the USA from 1953 through 1979.
After a CIA coup.
Yeah, that's right. The Shah Reza Pahlavi was America's sock puppet fascist dictator, no different than Sisi in Egypt right now, for example, who tortured people to death and the rest of that, which is what led to the revolution of 1979. People say all the time, oh, Iran, they just hate us. They just hate us. Yeah, well, there's a lot in that just. If you want to unpack it, it's America made them hate us. That's what it was. Tortured their uncles and cousins and brothers to death is what happened there. But then after the revolution, the Americans had hard feelings. But the you know, Reagan and Israel sold the Iranians weapons to fight against Iraq, even as they were backing Iraq against Iran as well. They didn't become a real problem until the Israelis decided it was good politics in the mid-90s.
More. Scott Horton, we're giving you a geography lesson when we come back. Yeah, you're right, man. War, geography.
Yeah.
We get to know where stuff is. You know, it's one thing, I think I told you this before, a friend of mine got as a house gift, you know, somebody that came up maybe at the airport, he got some maps, and he got these two globes. One was a blow-up big, nice globe, and another one was kind of a hand-squishy frustration on your desk thing or something. The hand squishy one had the countries and colors, and he goes, I don't like that one. I like this one. It doesn't have the gang colors.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm looking at. You see all the different colored maps. You know, we grow up, you know, like thinking they're, you know, it's gang territory, gangs with flags. I mean, you know, it's just, you look at it that way, and, you know, it makes it a lot clearer. But the Iran thing, let's go ahead and focus on the connection between Syria and Iran and this oil thing at Turkey and how that's going to play out. If that, are there people going, yeah, so what do you think was going to happen? We've been screaming. It's like Wolfowitz saying we're going to fund it with the oil and we actually do it and you bitch, you know? And we're going, well, it's the, you know, the terrorist things you're supposed to be against. Yeah, but they're doing what we want. It's so, wait, who's going to write the book? Who's the book writer? Which general or guy or somebody or State Department or somebody come out? Who's going to write the book?
What, where they tell the truth about all this mess? Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, how would you even write it?
I mean, this is something that's always been funny to me, is that the physical courage that these men display, or particularly the enlisted men, not the soldiers, I mean, not the officers, but, you know, these enlisted guys, at least, they're willing to get their nuts blown off, their legs blown off, lose their life to go force the American imperial will in some godforsaken place far away. But you can't get one out of 10 million federal government bureaucrats to have the moral courage to steal some documents and put them on WikiLeaks to tell the truth to the people. There ought to be 500 Daniel Ellsbergs and Edward Snowdens right now, and instead there's five, because they're cowards. They're cowards.
Yeah, I'm, well, it's, well, it's getting to the point that they're able to. There's a, well, it's a new web page. It's called Descent or something. Yeah. And it was, it's kind of a WikiLeaks that you get paid with Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies for the submission of different documents. And the more popular it is, you get paid, you know, for being a whistleblower. That's one of the things, is being paid. You know, they take away your entire livelihood and threaten your children and everything. And, you know, so if you can be anonymous and paid, crap, man, that's going to be a freaking Pandora box. Because that's how...
That's bad PR, though, because that makes it all sound self-interested instead of altruistic, which is the point, that I'm willing to take the risk in order to tell the truth to the people.
No, I understand, but you want to know why there's lower numbers. I can tell you that's why. You take away the, you know, problem of being outed and killed and not have livelihood, and then you get a lot more of it.
And you take that out of it, then it just looks selfish, and the reaction and the spin that you're just a traitor to your country and that kind of thing is that much easier.
Yeah, no,
you know, look at him cashing checks all day.
Yeah,
I mean, they're going to say
that
no matter what, I guess.
That's what, you know, WikiLeaks was. They, you know, pay us and we put up all this crap, and people did, and they said, your credit card's cut off. So you start doing, you know, cryptocurrency. Yeah, it's changing. I feel that they're in a rush. They're up against it, and they're, you know, but that's when they get scary. You know, they go, eh, doesn't matter how it happened. We're in a thermonuclear exchanging of mushroom clouds, and we got to deal and protect our way of life of, you know, get over it. And I'm just... Yeah, that's how it starts, man. All right, here we go.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime. 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
A blue Christmas.
Time, but you know, we need to get some, you know, information. This is when they do it. It's always, I remember so many times I'm going, wow, why did it's always Christmas Day or between Christmas and New Year's. It's like, you know, we can get away with a lot of crap. So now,
yeah, Somalia 06, man.
I'm sorry?
Horrible war. Iraq level nightmare of a war in Somalia. They did it, launched it on Christmas Day 2006. 90% of Americans or more have never even heard of it.
You know, this is, and a lot of times they do it with a whole nother distraction on something else. It'll be right when they're really getting, you know, there'll be some mass shooting or some other oil spill or some, you know, change the lead, wag the dog. We had a young activist watch Wag the Dog with us a couple of weeks ago, and she was like, holy crap. And she's like 25. I'm going, yeah. This is, how old were you when this was made in 98? I'm going, this has been going on forever! So it's always when something big happens, some mass something, you look and you go, okay, wait a minute, check your six. What the hell is going on somewhere else that they're distracting me from? So I'm trying to get Scott Horton on here. I tell you what, it's always some freaking big badass I got cruise missile war stuff. And Russia, that's another thing. Russia has modernized and armed up, and so is China. We're not looking as dominant as we were, are we?
Well, no. I mean, George W. Bush blew America's entire wad. It could have been worse, I guess. He could have got us into a war with Russia. Dick Cheney tried to get us into a war with Russia in 2008, and Bush overruled him. Thank God the calm, patient wisdom of George W. Bush prevailed in that circumstance when Georgia started the war against South Ossetia and Russia in August of 08 there. And you know, I can't help but point out that as far as I can see anywhere on the horizon, Barack Obama will be the most peaceful president we've had in this era. And he is a blood-soaked monster who's fought wars in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Libya, Syria, Iraq, and, you know, spread terrorists all throughout Mali and Nigeria and all of North Africa and the Middle East, created bin Laden's caliphate that he could have never dreamed of. And yet, compare Obama... I mean, seriously, it is. It's the highest treason since Benedict Arnold. There's just no other way to put it. What Bush did for al-Qaeda was magnificent, but what Obama did for al-Qaeda was deliberate. And so, yeah, no, I mean, there's just no comparison. And yet, look at who all of his, everybody who's coming up. It's Hillary Clinton and Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush and Donald Trump and a bunch of people who are absolutely crazy and who are, you know, willfully ignorant and proud of it and happy to consider Obama's legacy the legacy of somebody like Ron Paul the Peacenik, and now it's time to get serious and get back to more violence again.
Proud to be an American.
All they do is criticize him all day long, and Obama's going, hey, look, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do a full-scale invasion. I know you want me to, but I'm reluctant. I mean, God damn.
Yeah, vote for Hillary.
Special forces in the CIA and the Air Force, but at least he hasn't done a full-scale invasion. But then he's right, isn't he, that if Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush become the president, that we can expect a full-scale Iraq War III.
Okay, we do the Trump report with Dr. Tamburi on Thursday, and we got into a lot of RAND yesterday and stuff. But, you know, the thing is that we do the GOP and Democrat coverage of, you know, a couple hours on Thursday. All right, we get our dose of, damn it, I don't feel like looking any other time, and Dr. Frank does the work. But I tell you, I keep going, that Jeb's still in. No, he's done. He's gone. All the guys are going over the Rubio. It's done. Rubio is the next Obama. It's Rubio. And I'm going, I don't know, man. Until Jeb is pushing up daisies or actually out, you know, it's Bush Clinton. If Clinton starts to falter, here comes Bush again. I mean, you know, it seems like Clinton Bush, it's the same thing. And
the only one who threatens that status quo is Donald Trump, who is even worse than both of them.
And he's open about it. And what's happening is that there was the letter that was done to the Senate. We get you reelected committee of Ward Baker, wherever he is, comes out and says, hey, man, we got to look more like Trump and not challenge Trump, be Trumpish and getting down in the people. And they hate us because we don't do anything. Well, you got to promise reform and do more about reform. I go, what? You guys can't do votes now? What the hell? You know, it's like a contract on America again, new Gingrich crap. You know, it's all over again. But Trump is just, there's something that they don't see that they can negotiate or work with Trump as bad as he is and all the stupid stuff that he would do. I'm going, why are they so afraid of Trump? He's not controllable, not one of them. What does he represent anyway?
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing. He represents himself. That's it. And it's amazing. He believes in nothing. He has no principles whatsoever. The only thing he believes in is in himself, and he has no set of principles or beliefs that he checks any new information against or anything like that. He's an absolute weather vane, changes his opinion on any issue from the most important to the most trivial on a whim, and I think that's the most important thing about him, man. Here's a guy who could decide that, yeah, you know what? What we decided was we don't need the Bill of Rights anymore anyway. Meh. And just whatever. It doesn't mean anything to him at all. He said the other day, actually, when people were asking, man, are you serious? You want to close down mosques? He goes, hey, look, we're going to have to give up some of these privileges that we have always had. And he's talking about the First Amendment.
Yeah.
You know, the free exercise of religion clause in the First Amendment. He says, this is one of these privileges. He shrugs and waves his hand.
And his polls go up.
Yeah, dude. I mean, this guy is more dangerous than Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush by a lot.
Wow. That's hard to swallow that. That's, you know, on Hillary's side. We're
what he
screwed,
says about the wars. He says about the wars, I would go to the Pentagon and I would find a Patton. Right, I would find the most bloodthirsty, murderous, inconsiderate bastard in the entire Pentagon, and I would have him crush
to wield my will. Yeah,
that's,
I get
right.
It.
We will obliterate them. Meaning, he wants to just level Raqqa and Mosul and Fallujah, Ramadi, and steal all their oil and starve them all out and this kind of thing. He said yesterday, I swear to God, I couldn't make this up. He said, when it comes to these terrorists, it's time that we start targeting their families. This is the front runner of the Republican Party for the presidency of the United States of America right now. It's time to start killing innocent men, women, and children.
Vote for me. You know, there's also news, I think it's on Freedom's Phoenix today. You know, I saw it where staff put up that Trump is going to be meeting with Netanyahu.
Yeah, he's on his way to Israel.
Right now?
Oh, I don't know, but that was all the headlines. It's, you know, coming very soon anyway.
And to what? Negotiate? You going, you know, right from there, he's going to go see Putin? I mean, you know, you're going to negotiate a deal? You know, it's kind of... See, I remember during being a young man, I graduated high school in 79, So I'm young, you know, but you're paying attention to Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, he came off as the cowboy of I'm going to kick ass and we're going to get in Star Wars and spend money in big Navy. And I'm going, we're going, the evil empire, we're going to kick some ass. And people went, hell yeah. You know, they were just finally, and we feel safer, you know, right, by having a, you know, from position of strength thing. Well, I don't know how much it worked out because it just, you know, because in the wings there is Daddy Bush that were doing machinations or whatever the hell they were doing. But we lost our country a little more during the Reagan administration. People don't understand that. And yeah, we
just look at it. He was backing Saddam and the Ayatollah against each other at the same time, as we talked about before. And he was backing the Azam group and the rest of the Mujahideen against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. And, you know, his vice president, and never even mind all the butchery murder in El Salvador and Nicaragua and all that, but then his vice president becomes president and puts Dick Cheney in charge of the Pentagon and goes and puts American white Christian combat forces on the ground in the Arabian Peninsula and starts America on an entire new series of consequences.
Which is what led to Osama bin Laden's popularity, get your boots off of our sacred ground. Now, we're here, and it's wherever our American boots are, it's ours. Yeah, it's ours, man. Yep. Stop wars. Home educate. We'll be right back. Scott Horton, just a little bit.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. Since we've no place to go,
let it sunshine. It's Arizona. All right. This is, it's pretty nice out, and we're doing and kind of having fun. I've been working hard all week doing just carve out some time so that I can help my son, you know, paint his, he taking apart a pickup truck and the customized frame of the powder coated with the big 454, the engine of the flat black body, kind of sanding and prepping, painting and stuff right out here, you know, and it's just, it's been a pretty cool project. He's got this week off and he's just, man, his wife, he's got to be nice to her on something because, man, she didn't get any time. So he's getting this project. It's been sitting freaking in my yard for, a year so or more. So getting on that's good. Now, we're talking with Scott Horton, anti-war radio guy, scotthorton.org. And the one thing, when this kind of stuff happens and, we're going to threaten in war in Turkey and Russia and stuff, you got to check your six, man. There's something else going on. Scott, is there some other, what about the South China Sea? What's going on with China? What's going on with, freaking Argentina or Venezuela or something? There's something that's probably going on that we're going to be distracted from. What's up?
I don't know. Well, I hope not much is going on in the South China Sea. I mean, the Secretary of Defense went and posed on an aircraft carrier and acted tough. And, yeah, I'm doubtful that the Chinese would actually try to close those waterways to anybody. And I think, if anything, so far at least, to me, the biggest lesson of the whole pivot to Asia is the mindlessness with which American foreign policy is made. And You know, I think it was a New York Times article, and it's so completely ridiculous that it's believable to me, about how on one Saturday, Susan Rice took a couple of State Department flunkies, and they went and got out, you know, a big white piece of paper on the easel, kind of like Dr. House kind of thing. Let's write some ideas down and figure out what we're doing here. And Susan Rice, this dingbat, and, you know, her a few flunkies sat there, and they decided that, yeah, you know what we're going to do is, since obviously everything in the Middle East is wrapping up right now, we're going to go ahead and move all of our attention to East Asia. This is like in 2012 or 2013 or something, right when anybody who knows anything knows that America's obligations, quote unquote, in the Middle East are far from over in any way. And it just goes to show, you know, just I think the degree to which these people actually believe the ridiculous lies that they tell us about how things are going. Like, they really don't have... Okay, so, for example, all through 2011 and 12, all of us are screaming, like, oh, my God, Obama's taken the side of the Mujahideen. And al-Qaeda was almost a dead movement until Obama just grew them from, you know, 100 guys into 10,000 or more than that, 20,000, 30,000. But since the propaganda was, oh, no, we're just backing the mythical moderates, and we don't know what you're talking about, they kept it going. They, you know, as though they really were just backing mythical moderates, not Mujahideen. And then they make policies like, hey, let's pivot to Asia based on the theory that, what, there's no new al-Qaeda problem that we're going to have to deal with in the Middle East anytime soon or whatever, because they're so willfully ignorant of the consequences of their own actions, it seems like to me. And you know, I don't mean to sound sexist or anything, but Susan Rice just seems like a particularly stupid person to me. Like, she doesn't have the depth of understanding.
That's
of what the
minimum
hell is going
job
on
requirement for a lot of this stuff.
Do her own job right at all, you know?
Now, that's why these people are there. The brightest you never see. I mean, you know, they're the guys behind and doing here, read this. And, you know, but you can see how weak they are when they have to go to the bench or the back office to bring the people up front. Like Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld. And that, when they brought in Dick Cheney as the VP for W and Rumsfeld came in, I'm going, hell, I remember these guys from the 70s. I'm like, are you kidding me? It was one of the Face the Nation or some of the hosts up there one time. You know, Rumsfeld, they go, hey, we've been doing this for a long time. And they showed a split screen of them back 40 years ago or something. I'm going, yeah. You know, and they were uncomfortable with that. They were like, hey, man, what are you bringing that up for? Yeah, we've been around forever. And I'm wondering what the goal is. I mean, the South China Sea, I guess the main thing is it gives them a forward, more of a radius of 1,200 miles if we got missiles and kind of, you know, protect us, whatever, and it'd probably be the first thing that gets taken out. But then, you know, do the Chinese have submarines?
You know, I don't know what all submarines they have. They have a very limited navy, and they're building it up, but it's, you know, basically to guard their coast, and they do have some blue water ships that they're starting to build now, but mostly they're there just in reaction to us. In fact, I was just reading not long ago about how when Bill Clinton sent the 7th Fleet to go and intervene in the Taiwan Straits, not that they were about to invade Taiwan, but there was a little bit of test fire and rockets back and forth and this and that.
Yeah.
And when Clinton sent the aircraft carrier to go and intervene at that point, that there was a brand new doctrine adopted by the Chinese military that they needed to escalate and start building up their ships. So it's a tit-for-tat kind of thing. And the Politburo in Beijing is about as corrupt, almost probably as corrupt as the capital in Washington, D.C. So you're always going to have, you know, very strong vested interests in selling these, you know, big-ticket items like, you know, naval, you know, planes and ships and all these things cost a hell of a lot of money. And
so where does China,
you know,
it's
I think
a state
it's pretty
owned...
safe from the Air Force's point of view. Like, they're happy to pretend that they'll ever have an air war with China and buy expensive planes all day, but they don't think they'll ever have to really fight it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but China is, it's a state-owned military-industrial, our own complex kind of thing. Is there the same lobbying that goes on? Is there some individuals that make money? Or are they all working for the man, or how does that work?
Well, in China, I mean, it's a fascist economy just like ours.
All right. Or somebody making some money.
All cronies.
All right.
Cronies.
So they got some Schindlers all over the place. out there making widgets or whatever, using little, slave labor or something.
Yeah, sure. Hey, you know what, though? You asked me earlier, we were interrupted by the break, but you asked me earlier about, what's the big deal about Syria anyway, at least from the Americans' point of view or from Turkey's point of view. And certainly from the American point of view, the deal is they're friends with Iran. And Obama told Jeffrey Goldberg at the Atlantic, in no uncertain terms, that's right, Jeffrey Goldberg, if we were to get rid of Assad, that would be, I think he even used the term profound, it would be a profound loss for Iran. That would be a real blow to Iranian power if we could separate Iran from Syria, their one Arab allied state. And of course, Iran and Syria tightened up their relationship in reaction to American intervention in Iraq and threats to attack them both later. And, of course, as we've discussed previously, the redirection that started in 2006 where Bush realized his mistake in empowering Iran with Iraq War II and decided to redirect towards Saudi Arabia and their Mujahideen factions again. And they blame the assassination of Rafik Hariri in Lebanon, which was, I think, done by al-Qaeda. They blamed it on Bashar al-Assad and forced his army out of southern Lebanon and all that. And so at that point, that was when Assad started getting more and more, close to Iran, which then, of course, became the excuse to, crack down more and more on Assad. And, that's because Assad and Iran back Hezbollah, and they are a problem on Israel's northern border. And by problem, I mean they're a defensive threat. No one believes that Hezbollah would ever invade and conquer or liberate northern Israel, but they can keep the Israelis out of Lebanon, and that makes them horrible enough that, according to the neocons and the Likudniks, it's a good idea to get the Americans to overthrow Saddam and Assad and turn the whole damn region upside down, no matter how many people die, in order to secure Israeli dominance. Peace with our neighbors when we can just dominate and bully and scare the hell out of them forever?
It seems to me that this is going to turn into the same thing World War One was, is that the dominating, we win, and we're because we say in the international, the UN along with us, and NATO, and we have guns and stuff, are going to redraw some lines. And Kurds are going to get something, ISIS will get a little bit of something, and this will get a little something, we'll change up a little something of something. But I'm telling you, the one thing is Israel wants to expand. They want to get the Golan Heights and its oil, that's Syria. They want Syria, Assad to go away, to be out of the way of that. The Ottoman Empire will continue to negotiate to get more of something. I mean, I'm seeing, in my lifetime, I've seen Europe and Middle East lines change. The maps have changed. A lot of people think these gang colors are there and written in stone and forever, and they're not. Just in my lifetime, they've changed. You think there might be a possibility of lines getting changed, Scott?
Well, yeah. I mean, Iraq and Syria both already ceased to exist. And there's a new Islamic State in what used to be Western Iraq and Eastern Syria right now. And I'm sorry, I gotta go right now because I have another interview, Ernie. But thanks very much again for having me, dude.
You bet. Thanks, brother. Bye.
Yeah.
Oh, the same old same. All right, next hour we're just going to chill. Keith McAnarchist, a guy come talk about the economy, and he's Mr. Flyering guy, when you need him. And then and Brian's going to help us with solar.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Friday, December 4th, 2015. Silver is trading at $14.29 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,068 per ounce. And according to BitcoinAverage.com, the average price of Bitcoin is $362. Antiwar.com reports the CIA-trained paramilitary faction, the Coast Protection Force, KPF, in Afghanistan's Khost province is coming under growing criticism from locals as well as the Afghan central government for being unaccountable and causing a growing civilian death toll. Afghan officials say the KPF conducted a series of home raids under the guise of counterterrorism operations against the homes of totally innocent civilians and killed at least six of them. Two U.S. advisors, apparently CIA, were present during the raids. The CIA has come under fire for using the KPF as a virtual proxy force, ordering them around the province on arbitrary arrest missions, detaining people without charges, despite not being a police force in and of themselves, and torturing them. This is basically par for the course for U.S.-backed factions within Afghanistan, but the KPF is a much larger, more concentrated force and has gotten away with operations this way for years because the coast province has such a heavy Taliban presence. Increasingly, however, even the Afghan central government sees the group's operations as fueling unrest among tribal leaders more than doing any real harm to the Taliban. FPP Radio News is brought to you by Bitcoin Not Bombs. Bitcoin Not Bombs is a launching pad for nonprofits and social entrepreneurs into the financial freedom of the Bitcoin economy. Bitcoin Not Bombs is fully committed to being the hub of the nonprofit sector of the Bitcoin economy, maximizing the potential cross-promotion of all our clients and commercial partners. To learn more, visit BitcoinNotBombs.com. UPI reports the number of first-time applicants for unemployment benefits rose by about 9,000 people last week to nearly 270,000, a number still considered historically low. The government's number of initial claims is a significant gauge of national layoffs, and analysts say last week's seasonally adjusted numbers are a positive sign for the department's job report due Friday. Analyst Stephen Stanley, an economist at Amherst Pierpont Security, told the Wall Street Journal, "The pace of layoffs has slowed from already historically low levels. The labor market remains quite healthy and shows no signs of running out of steam anytime soon." Non-seasonally adjusted claims, though, declined by more than 42,000 last week. Non-seasonally adjusted claims represent the total increase or decrease in applications, unadjusted to reflect expected patterns of unemployment. The Labor Department, which said employers added 271,000 jobs in October, is expected to release its November jobs report on Friday. Many forecasters expect the month's job additions to be around 200,000. For nearly 40 years, Robertson Roberts Brokerage has been a trusted source for buying and selling precious metals like gold and silver. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and have permanently removed the minimum purchase amount for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Robertson Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on buying and selling precious metals and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 800-874-9760 or visit online at rrbi.co. Reuters reports the U.S. Senate overwhelmingly approved a five-year highway bill on Thursday that would fund America's roads, bridges, and mass transit systems and revive the charter of the U.S. Export-Import Bank over the objections of conservative Republicans. In an action that sends the measure to President Barack Obama for his signature, the Senate voted 83-16 to approve the $305 billion legislation hours after the bill cleared the House of Representatives by a margin of 359-65. Obama is expected to sign the bill into law on Friday, hours before current funding is scheduled to run out. As the first long-term U.S. highway bill in a decade, the Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act, or FAST Act, represents a rare victory for bipartisanship in Congress. The legislation returns the Export-Import Bank to operations over conservative opposition that allowed its charter to expire on June 30th. The agency, which helps U.S. companies with foreign competitors, would have its charter renewed through September 30th, 2019, but with a lower lending limit and other reforms. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.